Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 30th day of October, 2018. I'm your host, Mark Call, and let's start off our look at what's going on around the nation and the world today. It's, of course, still insane, with a bit of good news, bad news, and not necessarily ugly news, but maybe funny news, at least. Starting here, from Jeffrey Greider, Now the End Begins, several hundred black youth leaders, and you may have heard about this, especially if you don't listen to the Waste Stream, met in Washington, D.C. for their inaugural conference this weekend, and the group was invited on Friday to the White House, where President Trump spoke to them. And as you're probably aware, there was another major killing in a gun-free killing zone, and the fake news media is working overtime, says Greider, to make sure you don't know about something being called Blexit, the black exit from the plantation, much less the potentially devastating impact it will have on the Democrats. Black youth in America, and you've probably heard this message preached from the pulpits at CNN, MSNBC, and the other three-letter fake news agencies, have been warned for generations they'd better not leave the political plantation known as the Democrat Party, and for generations they've obeyed that command. While brave leaders like Kanye West have not only led the way, but also served as a kind of a warning to those who might try to follow them. And now, writes Greider, conservative political commentator Candace Owens, who is black, young, and Republican, is challenging that assertion. She and others have launched Blexit as a clarion call to black voters across America to walk away from a party that's done nothing but betray them and use them as political pawns, primarily to enrich themselves. Here's a bit of their message that's come out from the conference and since. Blexit, they write, is a national movement of minorities that have awakened to the truth. It is for those who have taken an objective look at our decades-long allegiance to the left and asked ourselves, what do we have to show for it? They go on to note the media has betrayed our focus. They've learned the value of our untethered emotionality and have chosen to emphasize certain topics in an effort to suspend our rational thinking. That's why in 2016, the 16 unarmed black men shot and killed by police officers took headline precedence over the approximately 330,000 black babies aborted each year. And that, they notice, why the topic of illegal alien children being separated at the border earned excessive coverage, while the 70% single black motherhood rate, highly encouraged by government welfare programs, is ignored. Alana Mastrangelo, speaking at the conference, said that, quote, while Hitlery viewed us as super predators, while CNN views us as token Negroes who don't read, Donald Trump views us as Americans, while the crowd cheered. Meanwhile, Rasmussen reports that President Trump's approval rating among all voters is back at 50%, but among black voters it continues to grow and is now at record highs. Here, folks, your host can't help but recall the big tech admissions of attempts at voter manipulation that backfired on social media giant Gulag because they failed to account for Trump's much higher than expected popularity with Hispanic voters. So yeah, I'm picturing all those inner city, formerly leftist strongholds, where those that were inclined to manipulate votes could count on being able to get away with 100.000% unanimity for their designated socialist. How many young black voters in that area do you think it takes to come forward and say, wait a minute, we certainly weren't on board with that? And even though CNN will probably call them nasty names and try to ignore them, even the possibility of a whole bunch of whistleblowers coming forth and, well, demonstrating, hey, there really was election manipulation after all, and it wasn't the dreaded Ruskies, could certainly throw a spanner in the works. So maybe it's no wonder with the election 1 week from today, there's some panic in those circles that pretty well thought they had this blue wave in the bag, one way or another. On to the bad news next, courtesy of Breitbart's John Boehner. The United Nations is warning the president, I guess they know who they think is boss, that he must allow the mercenary migrant caravan into America. International officials with the UN Refugee Agency assert that the president has no choice. Said a spokesman for the UN Refugee Agency in an interview with Voice of America, quote, our position globally is that the individuals who are fleeing persecution and violence need to be given access to territory and protection, including refugee status and determination procedure. And if the people who are fleeing persecution and violence enter Mexico, they need to be provided access to the Mexican asylum system, and those entering the United States need to be provided access to the American asylum system, unquote, even if they've been warned in advance that they really aren't refugees and won't be allowed to enter. So I guess there you have it. Since when do Americans think their law or elections really matter anymore? Breitbart's also reported that the UN Refugee Agency, SIC, is aiding the mercenary migrant caravan, having put 45 UN workers on the ground with a group of Central Americans, which, who knows, may be far less than the number of workers that ISIS and MS-13 have already embedded within the caravan.
Come to think of it, I wouldn't even be surprised if there's quite a bit of overlap. From the good and then the bad, we go to the, maybe you could say ugly, but it's kind of funny anyway. This comes from the Gateway Pundit. And Christina Layla calls it an interesting plot twist. The designated patsy and bogus bomber Caesar Sayoc and Stormy Daniels, remember that name, actually worked at the same strip club. He worked as a DJ at what's called the Ultra Gentleman's Club in West Palm Beach, Florida, where porn star turned Trump nemesis Stormy Daniels performed in April. What can you say, folks? The coincidences just keep on a-coming. This next one is so over-the-top ugly that it's almost, but no, not quite funny. As Zero Hedge puts it, the paragon of political correctness and the queen of virtue signaling, Hitlery herself sat down with Recode's Kara Swisher over the weekend to answer questions about just how evil and awful anyone who doesn't agree with them, i.e., anybody she refers to as deplorables, must be. And since this really is so ugly, quotes won't get it, folks. We need to go right to the recording.
What's often called political correctness is politeness.
Right.
It's not being rude and insulting to people.
What, you mean like calling them deplorables and wanting to take away their constitutionally protected rights? Or just treating them like idiots? And yeah, folks, I'm going to skip over all the insulting, in-your-face whoppers about how the Democrat Party is so much more inclusive than those evil Republicans, in spite of the hypocrisy and even a bit of primary election rigging, which probably didn't make Barry's socialists feel all that included.
And I don't want to go around insulting people. I don't want to paint with a broad brush. Every immigrant is this. Every African-American is that. Every, you know.
Secret Service agent is a pig. Oh, and forget the ones that she called the N-word. The media certainly has.
You know, that's childish.
What do you think of Cory Booker's, and you didn't comment on him, and you feel free
I adore him.
What do you think about him saying, kick them in the shins, essentially, start to get to that kind of political...
Well, that was Eric Holder.
Yeah, Eric Holder,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know they all look alike.
No, they don't. Oh, well done.
Oh, well done, she says. Megyn Kelly just lost her job, but she did get the $69 million payout for one hell of a lot less insulting comment than that. But wait a minute, it was just a joke. It's all in good fun. Maybe not as funny as blackface, though, right, Hitlery? As Zero Hedge points out, and everybody who's listened to this comment is probably thinking, can you imagine if Donald Trump had tried to say something like that? It would be the front page news in every paper across these United States. And CNN and the other fake news networks would literally have it on endless loop replay. It's all in good fun. That is, if you're Hitlery and can get away with things that almost none of the now-fired sports commentators, pundits, columnists, and high-profile, not-so-far-above-the-law politicians have been able to get away with. But I guess if you're Hitlery and can run for president after having committed treason and have managed to get away with saying the N-word all kinds of times and nobody dares to interview her victims, much less air any of the recordings that are probably out there somewhere but won't ever make it to Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube, this is nothing new. The American Mirror's Kyle Olson summarized it this way. Hitlery Clinton appears to benefit from her progressive privilege. There's a great term. It's the only thing that protects her from getting the Roseanne treatment. Remember Roseanne? She's even pretty far left, and that one was obviously a joke. And not being dismissed in disgrace. And did you notice how fast Kara Swisher contradicted her bad joke and said, no, no, they don't? Obviously, she knows her job would have been at risk if she'd laughed and not stepped in to cover for that racist slip. So, one more time, let's hear the kind of in-your-face racism that's funny, if you're politically correct enough.
Yeah, I know they all look alike.
No, they don't.
I guess, folks, if Hitlery can't ever be president, at least she'll be well qualified for a job with the New York Times editorial board. Next, we need to segue back to the mercenary migrant invasion caravan for a bit more serious news. Two headlines to summarize today's status, both from the Daily Mail out of the UK. Trump has sent 5,200 troops, backed by 150 miles of razor wire, as well as Black Hawk helicopters, drones, and C-130s, to the Mexican border in order to deter that invasion from ever arriving. Meanwhile, agents rehearse for riots in El Paso. 800 troops, as we reported last week, were already en route by Monday, a force the Department of Defense is saying is dramatically increased by adding helicopter companies and engineers bringing heavy equipment. And in total, the DOD is sending 5,200 troops to harden the border, said the Pentagon at a briefing Monday. And as more than a few people who actually know how serious this escalation and mercenary invasion is intended to get have pointed out, this is the largest invasion force ever gathered south of the border in the history of the United States. Oh, and in case you're wondering, I certainly was, Santa Anna had less than 2,000 troops when they massacred the Alamo, including men like William Travis, Jim Bowie, and Davy Crockett. And while the Daily Mail continues to say that the president calls it an invasion, but it really isn't, they do admit in another headline that a second migrant caravan has now stormed into Mexico with a violent group from Central America among them carrying bombs. Molotov cocktails is probably a better description, and guns, defying a huge police presence to cross the border from Guatemala. The Daily Mail also does note this. The second group back at the Guatemalan frontier has been more unruly than the first one that crossed. Why does that not surprise us? Guatemala's Interior Ministry said that their police officers were injured when the migrant group broke through border barriers on Guatemala's side of the bridge. Many later crossed via the river. One man died in that attempt. Some were seen carrying guns and firebombs, and on Monday, Mexican Interior Secretary Alfonso Navarrete Prida lamented what he called a second violent attempt to cross the border, accusing people, now listen carefully to this, folks, of placing the elderly, pregnant women, and children at the front, putting them at risk of being crushed. Fortunately, he said, that did not happen. Unquote. But that certainly doesn't mean we can't expect to see similar tactics again. Meanwhile, a story from the much maligned by the left and increasingly banned InfoWars reported that Judicial Watch has called for a criminal investigation into George Soros-funded groups that are behind the mercenary migrant invasion caravan, and notes that Fox Business News pulled a recent interview with Chris Farrell of Judicial Watch, who made the claim that George Soros was linked to U.S. taxpayer funding of that caravan. Earlier this year, the story begins, WorldNet Daily has reported that the previous migrant caravan had the support of, quote, major foundations, corporations, and billionaire George Soros. And last year, Judicial Watch said that the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, a federal agency which works closely with the State Department, was in fact giving grant money to Soros-linked groups which were pushing leftist agendas in various countries. Six U.S. senators also then asked then-Secretary of State Rex Tillerson to investigate the relationship between USAID and Soros-funded foundations, resulting in the following admission in a March 14th of 2017 letter, quote, much of the concerning activity in Macedonia has been perpetuated through USAID funds awarded to implement in entities such as George Soros's Open Society Foundations. As a recipient of multiple grant awards and serving as a USAID contractor implementing projects in the small nation of 2.1 million people, our taxpayer-funded foreign aid goes far, allowing Foundation Open Society Macedonia, Soros's FOSM group, to push a progressive agenda and invigorate the political left. Unquote. And Judicial Watch notes that similar grants were given to Soros operations in Romania and Colombia. Most recently, the Gateway Pundit has suggested that caravan migrants were seen carrying USAID bags. And they haven't even been staged into position yet at the southern border. Item from Axios.com, and they call it an exclusive, Trump is now targeting birthright citizenship, says the headline, via executive order. The president plans to sign an executive order that would remove the so-called right to citizenship for babies of non-citizens and unauthorized immigrants born on U.S. soil, he said yesterday in an exclusive interview for Axios on HBO, a new four-part documentary series debuting on HBO this Sunday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, which they note would be the most dramatic move yet in Trump's hardline immigration campaign, targeting anchor babies and so-called chain migration. And it would certainly set off another standoff with the courts. because where Obama's executive orders, unconstitutional as all get out, were allowed to slide right on by without question, anything Trump does is certainly subject to scrutiny, and this one will be exceptionally so. In the interview, the president told Axios that he's run the idea of ending birthright citizenship by his counsel, and he plans to proceed with what they call the highly controversial move, which no doubt will face legal challenges, and which his advisors contend doesn't require a constitutional amendment. You can definitely do it, he said, with an act of Congress, but now they're saying I can do it with just an executive order, unquote. And you know what, folks? I guess once upon a time, people would have said that even infringing the right to keep and bear arms would have required a constitutional amendment. Now, bureaucrats do it without even the stroke of a pen. Alcohol prohibition once required a constitutional amendment. Any other drug prohibitions? Not anymore. And do you remember when airport strip searches were actually forbidden and other things took a stinking warrant? Not anymore. So, for good or ill, why are we not surprised that this is where we are? Twisted as it may be, you certainly can't argue with the logic. Because, as George Bush once famously put it, the Constitution is nothing more than a GD piece of paper, unless progressives raise a stink about it, because they're not in the Oval Office. And there's no small amount of irony here either, because the president is charged with seeing that the laws be faithfully executed, and in fact, with defense of the nation. And that's quite the concept, given that we haven't really worried about our own borders, as opposed to someone else's, for decades now. Said the president, quote, we're the only country in the world where a person comes in and has a baby, and the baby is essentially a citizen of the United States, with all of those benefits. It's ridiculous, he said, it's ridiculous, and it has to end. Oh, and while I won't go into detail here and now on this subject, folks, for those that actually have read the 14th or Red Amendment, the line about persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof was, until the 1960s, never applied to undocumented or temporary immigrants. And even the Supreme Court has never yet claimed otherwise. People who never heard that there was an alternative to Twitter have heard about Gab in the last few days, mostly because, as Tom Luongo puts it, that piece of human debris that shot up the Pittsburgh synagogue was a Gab user. Yeah, he was on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, too, but that doesn't matter, because Gab doesn't censor, even though they're more stringent, says Luongo, in enforcing their policy to remove speech, which is an incitement to violence, than Twitter is. But the public-private partners clearly intend to destroy anyone that threatens their monopoly. Gab was dropped by PayPal without specific reason within hours, and their hosting service, GoDaddy, gave them a termination and deregistration notice for their domain name. Well, bottom line, he suggests, free markets will eventually prevail, but we've got a long way to go to get there. Some comments next from a great piece by Jeremiah Johnson up on Max Lavo's shtfplan.com. That's a nom de plume, of course, for a retired Green Beret, Special Forces Airborne. It's entitled Surveillance, Economic Turmoil, and Chaos Among All Nations, and he notes that there's a three-pronged attack in progress in order to foster global governments. And here they are. Number one, create ubiquitous electronic surveillance with unlimited police power. Hey, well, that one's well underway. Number two, throw the entire earth into an economic tailspin. Well, we're not there yet, but we can smell it from here. And number three, destroy all nationalism, national borders, and create chaos among all nations prior to an incendiary event or series of actions that leads, inevitably, to a world war. I guess that one, too, we can see is well underway. The world war, he says, is the most important part of it all in the eyes of the globalists. The Great Depression culminated in a world war, with periods of economic upheaval generally always followed by major wars. The war, says Johnson, is most needed by the globalists because they need to rid the world of about, 6 or 7 billion people, which is why you see such experimentation among the progressives, infecting vectors like mosquitoes with viruses that are almost immune to antibiotics, the unearthing of ancient viruses in the permafrost and frozen areas of the Arctic, and the insect-sized drones and smaller, even still, nanobots being touted as a cure for all kinds of things that ail you, but in reality capable of delivering disease just as well, if not better. The destruction of nationalism is perhaps even more obvious, particularly in Europe. Globalists like Angela Merkel are destroying their own countries from within by introducing hostile and ethnically as well as religiously diverse elements. leading to a time when the oligarchs of all of those nations will have a seat at the table, he suggests, to carve up what remains of the earth after they finish with their war that decimates the population, leaving a compliant few remaining, dependent upon those oligarch politicos' whims for life itself, while they control the wealth, power, and resources. When it comes to the parts that sound like science fiction, like the surveillance state, look no further, he suggests, than communist China, the testing ground for what's to come. We've already talked on this show, folks, about how Google and Apple and others are in bed with Big Brother about as close as you can get. Jeremiah Johnson points to a piece last week from France 24 entitled Armed Drones, Iris Scanners, China's High-Tech Security Gadgets, which referred to an exhibition held in Beijing exposing all of those measures and more. Smart sunglasses that sound an alarm whenever an enemy of the state is spotted, iris recognition scanners, drones able to respond with firepower, smart homes with every imaginable device from refrigerators to smart locks, all interacting with one another via the Internet of Things, of course, and, obviously, with Big Brothers. In this case, it's China, but it'll be coming to a theater near you, too. Law enforcement. China, he suggests, is the beta testing site, and their methods are now being incorporated into the formerly free United States. Look no further there than the transportation sexual abusers, which don't intend to stay confined to airports for very long, and have already indicated they're going to use biometrics and facial recognition as a condition for all air travel. And if you've been paying attention, you already know that's just the beginning. Because who do you think wants the control afforded by self-driving cars, if not the controllers? And even the battle at the border is a double-edged sword. No doubt this is part of the bigger Soros et al., bigger brother plan, because the internal passports are coming along with all this other stuff. Where are you going? Why are you going? And by whose authority? No, we won't have your papers, please, because they'll already know before you were allowed to leave your front door or even live. And just remember, he says, every fence that keeps something out also can keep something in. Here's the paragraph your host thinks is the real payoff for the story. All of us, says Jeremiah Johnson, have watched and seen our country descend into a moral morass from which only the citizenry at grassroots level, following faith in one another and by being decent to one another and holding on to faith in God, can extricate us, along with the desire to survive, and to survive smart, too, to make it through what's coming. It can only be prepared for incrementally and in areas of the country that most think it's worthless or perhaps even impossible to live in. So many, he said, have challenged writers to propose a plan. And what they mean is resistance or even open revolt. No, not the kind that CNN has already been pushing with the help of the leftists who get sent bogus bombs by surrogates. It would be laughably stupid, he says, if not for the fact that many ask for a proposition in writing for a definitive reason and a definitive strategy. Jeremiah Johnson says this, they want all of this in writing because they're shills for the government, and they want that writer in place to put such a thing down in writing, fomenting dissent, as justification to take that writer and possibly the entire blog down, while they continue fomenting from the sidelines. Every word here, he notes, is recorded by X Keyscore, mine and yours, and stored in an NSA database in Utah under a file for dissenters, agitators, and every other descriptive label that you can think of just for those who champion critical thought or independent thinking. Every conservative-minded journalist or writer who dares to espouse these views and theories is being recorded and kept under some kind of watch. You can be certain of it. Many are either shutting down or knuckling under and complying. The globalists are getting what they wish, consolidating their resources, or so they think, while they tank the fiat economies and currencies of the nations. They're literally destroying cultures who just a mere two centuries ago would have armed their entire male populaces with swords and sent invaders either packing or cut them to pieces. And the way they're doing it, they're destroying cultures by making them question themselves. If you think about it, it's the greatest tactic imaginable. We are in the decline, he concludes, of the American nation. Now empire. And the sad truth is, the Marquis of Queensbury is dead, and the rules have already gone out the window. When the dust settles, those who had the foresight and the ability to act on it will be the ones who will be given a gift, a chance to participate in what's to come. So he says, stay in that good fight, fight to win. And that means be overcomers, folks, and most importantly, know who you serve. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.